Hi there, this is Laurie Hughes of Four Leg Rehab Incorporated, your place for online canine rehab education. And today's audio is, well, it's an audio because I thought the visuals on this would make for a really boring PowerPoint presentation. So I would just talk it and then provide you guys the handout in the article section. So this is on management of urinary incontinence in women. Now, why in women? Because the last video we did, we learned about incontinence in dogs, okay? And human incontinence is similar, okay, to a certain extent, as it is in humans is similar in dogs, especially in regards to stress incontinence and urge incontinence, okay? And it's important, I think, then, to look at what role does physiotherapy play in female incontinence, in humans and women. And then my next video, what I'd like to do then, is translate the information from human to dogs so that we can then, based on what we do in people, what we know in dogs, how can we then look at where the role that physiotherapy and rehabilitation can play potentially in incontinence in dogs. So, alrighty, and away we go. So, start off with some definitions. So you've got simple incontinence, and this is associated with activities and or urgency or frequency to urinate. And this is where you can have stress incontinence, where women would get leaking with coughing, sneezing, or laughing. Urge incontinence, so leaking on the way to the bathroom. And then there's also an overactive bladder, which is a desperate urgency to empty the bladder, often accompanied by large volume leakage, and usually waking in the night with the need to urinate. And so those are all simple incontinence, as compared to complicated incontinence, which is associated with pain, infection, poor stream, stop starting during voiding, pelvic irritation, or radical surgery, or suspected fistula. It's all stuff that doesn't quite fit into the simple incontinence category. Now, did you know that 26% of women aged 30 to 59, so and mostly in the 40s, have some type of urinary incontinence? So that's huge. About a quarter of women have some kind of urinary incontinence. So it is fairly common. And quite frankly, if you look at incontinence in dogs, and especially in the spayed females, what did we learn the last time? I think it was like about 20%. So it's actually kind of similar. So what I want to present to you guys is what's called the Integrated Continence System. And this was developed by physiotherapists Heather Gruer and Linda McLean out of Kingston, Ontario. And it's basically an evidence-based model. So it's looking at all the factors that can contribute to incontinence in women, and then looking at breaking down, well, what can be done in each, defining each, but what can be done in each. So there's a lovely little diagram that you can see if you print out the handout, and I'll have it in the video when we talk about, or whatever, when we talk about this in dogs. So they divide the incontinence into either structural components or modifiable components. Modifiable. So we'll go a little bit more into that. Okay. So if we look at structural systems, and your structural systems, just to go over, you have structural urethral closure systems. So you have intrinsic urethral closure systems, okay, and this would be reminding ourselves that the urethra is a tube with smooth and striated muscles around it. So, to quote, it says, the closure pressure of the urethra is further augmented by a well-developed submucosal vascular plexus, which is a watertight mucosal coaptation that occurs when the arteriovenous anastomosis fills with blood and it creates a hermetic seal. Now, these vessels also have estrogen and progesterone receptors, and is suggesting then that there's a hormonal link. And this could very well be why estrogen-based therapies work in vet medicine. Okay, now the next structural urethral closure system is the urethral support system, and this includes the endopelvic fascia, the anterior vaginal wall, the arcus tendinous fasciae pelvis, as well as the levator ani muscles. Okay, now the pelvic floor structure is comprised of primarily the levator ani muscles and the coccygeus muscles. And if we remind ourselves then of the innervation too, that the perineal branch of the pudendal nerve arises from the sacral nerve roots S2 down to S3 in people, and that provides somatic innervation to the levator ani muscles. So you're going to hold that in your head, S2 to S4, because I'm going to care about that when we start looking at innervate or things that we can do for dogs and also in people too. Now, if you contract the levator ani, come on, I know you're sitting there, just do it. So you contract your levator ani, it also lifts the pelvic floor, which then moves the bladder neck anteriorly, and that helps to close the urethra. Okay, so that's your urethral support system. Then you have the lumbopelvic stability system. And this would be intact osseoligamentous factors. Okay, so this is bones, ligaments, everything holds things in place. That would be form closure. Okay. You would have muscle compression forces. So all the muscles that are holding and supporting and strong. Okay, this is force closure, and you would have control, you need rather control of the nervous system. So, if we look at control of the lumbar spine and the pelvis, it is dependent on the local muscle systems that consist of the diaphragm, the transverse abdominis, these pelvic floor muscles, as well as the lumbar multifidus. Okay, so this is what is comprised in the lumbar spine and the lumbopelvic region to help stabilize everything. Now, you need coordinated activity of these muscles, okay, in order to have good postural control. And coordinated activity also helps regulate intra-abdominal pressure and can help increase the tension of the thoracolumbar fascia, which again gives you stability of the lumbopelvic region. And you have to have a nervous system that is able to evaluate the requirements for lumbopelvic control, okay, and to also help determine the current status of your posture and movements and everything in the same region, and can help develop strategies to meet those demands, okay. So if I am running, I need stability. If I'm lifting something, I likely, depending on my posture, I need stability in some muscles more than I would in other muscles. So that's all nervous system and I guess feed forward mechanisms, which basically means that I'm going to lift something or move in a certain way, and my brain has to activate the muscles that are going to support my lumbopelvic region, not just the muscles that are going to do the heavy lifting, but the support ones as well. So I need a nervous system that can do that. And then we're going to get the modifiable systems, okay, and I'm just going to list these off because we're going to talk a little bit about each of these in a little bit when we talk about pathophysiology and then what we can do about it. But so the modifiable systems represent external factors that can influence the overall function of urinary continence system. So modifiable factors, and I would say these are the ones where, from a rehab perspective, we can have the most influence. So you'll have motor control factors, which are going to be pelvic floor muscle dysfunction. Okay, so the muscles down in the pelvic floor aren't working quite right. You can have postural and movement dysfunction, low back pain and pelvic pain that can be causing problems, and breathing disorders that can affect motor control factors that can affect continence. Second is going to be musculoskeletal factors. So this could be decreases in range of motion in adjacent joints or in the global system. So it could be sacroiliac joints or hips, for example, or lumbar spine, or ribs. Okay. There may be decreased muscle strength, and that could be quite specifically to the pelvic floor, but it might also be abdominals, and in particular transverse abdominis. And I'm going to throw in there glutes. Okay? And it could be decreased muscle endurance, so the ability to use them over a long period of time. And that really is also tying into pelvic floor. And then you have behavioral factors. So these are definitely things that are modifiable. It could be associated with chronically elevated intra-abdominal pressure. We'll talk a little bit more about that coming up here. Could be physical inactivity, maybe abnormal fluid intake and voiding patterns, or poor psychosocial health. Okay, so we'll get into these. So let's start looking at the pathophysiology of stress urinary incontinence, and then what can be done. Okay, what is done from on the human side for medical and, in particular, physical therapy interventions. So, in our structural system deficits, okay, so in the urethral closure system deficits, this is commonly associated with patients who've had multiple anti-continence procedures. So this could be multiple surgeries or interventions in that regard. It could be due to radical pelvic surgery or radiation, could be due to menopause or urogenital atrophy. Pathophysiology of urethral support system deficits. This could be due to direct damage to the pelvic floor muscles or the nerve supply to these muscles due to labor or vaginal delivery. Okay. Then there may also be stretching or tearing of the fascial supports for the urethra and the bladder that can cause hypermobility of the urethra and bladder, which can compromise the ability to close sphincters or create closure pressure to the urethra. Okay, so as we remember, because you watched the video about the incontinence in dogs, we find in dogs that their bladder and urethra sits further back into the pelvis. So this would be very similar in a person, that if you have stretching of the fascial support, you can have the bladder and the urethra that also are not properly supported, that can have too much mobility and also, you know, sit a little bit lower as well. And C would be aging, estrogen deficiency, and connective tissue abnormalities that can contribute to decreased strength of the connective tissues of the pelvic floor. Okay. Now, and this is where I was talking a little bit, to note, when the fascia of the pelvic floor becomes over-distended, the perineum may descend over time, and the pelvic floor muscles can actually lengthen and occupy a lower position in the pelvic cavity. Okay, so that is, to me, sounds very much like what we learned happens in dogs. So, from a therapy standpoint, so this isn't so much physical therapy, other than, you know, we would want to know about medications and as a peripheral awareness. But this is where, let's start with surgery could come to play. I'm going to just do a flip here to find my surgery. So that could be the retropubic colposuspension. Okay, and we looked at colposuspension as treatment options in dogs, and various surgical sling techniques. It may also be treatment with the urethral bulking agent, so that's the injection. You remember that from the dog side. Don't want to repeat everything in there, but it's basically injecting collagen into and around the urethra. Okay, which is transient in people too. I will let you know that they basically find 40 to 70% cure rate at 18 months, but the effects are temporary. So, anyway, same as what we learned in dogs. But medication-wise, so what is out there for the humans with medication-wise would be estrogen. Okay, because it's known to act on the urethral mucosa, the vasculature in that region, so similar to what's done in dogs. However, it is highly controversial and debated therapy in people. Okay, so we don't look at estrogen-based therapies. We don't look at that lightly in people's side of things because we know that there can be issues with that. Other medical treatment could be epinephrine and serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And what happens there is you get an increased urethral resistance pressure, maximal urethral closure pressure, and thickness of the striated urethral sphincter, which may then improve the frequency of leaking and patient's quality of life. Side effect on that one is nausea. Next would be anticholinergics. And actually, you know, from what I read, they said this is the first choice in humans. Findings research-wise that improves symptoms and quality of life. Side effects for people are dry mouth and constipation. The next one is beta-3 adrenergic agonists. And these are used to promote relaxation of the detrusor muscle around the bladder and will help to increase bladder capacity without increasing residual volume. And they say the side effects are headache, urinary tract infection, urinary retention, hematuria, dry mouth, constipation, and fecal incontinence. Ooh, no thank you. Okay, and then lastly would be botulism toxin injection into the detrusor muscle. And with the reports that it may improve the quality of life and reduction of urinary episode, urge incontinence, and nocturia and urination frequency. So those are basically the things that can be done that are used to look at urethral closure system deficits and urethral support system deficits. Now we start to get into the stuff that we can play with a little bit. So we can have, and this is still structural deficits, so the lumbopelvic stability system deficits. So, for example, okay, and this is theory, that osteoarthritis, stenosis, or joint instability in the lumbopelvic region could have an effect. There's no evidence for this yet because it hasn't been studied. However, if we look at supporting rationale, what has been studied is we know that asymmetric sacroiliac joint laxity is associated with postpartum pelvic pain. Diastasis rectus, okay, so kind of a split in the linea alba or problem with the rectus muscle, has been linked with pubic pain and myofascial pain in the abdomen and pelvic floor muscles. And we also know that manual compression of the pelvis, so like in wearing a, there's these things called a sacroiliac joint belt, which kind of sits low across the pelvis and can strap together tightly, and it kind of basically holds your pelvis together. So manual compression of the pelvis can eliminate the exaggerated descent of the bladder and pelvic floor muscles in patients with sacroiliac joint pain. When they do this during a supine, so lying on your back, straight leg raise. So lying on your back, doing a straight leg raise, you're increasing intra-abdominal pressure, with which, if you did not have this belt on, would, in some cases, cause the bladder and the pelvic floor to descend, which is kind of interesting. And we'll hold on to that thought process, how we can use that in dogs, or rather, I'm going to make a star for myself because I'm just going to add a theory to my next video. Okay, so therefore, stress urinary incontinence may be a consequence of failed load transfer through the lumbopelvic region. Okay, so now we get into the modifiable factor deficit, and this is totally us. Okay, what can we do? So, number one is your motor control factors, okay? So here, we want to work on pelvic floor muscle awareness and ability to perform a contraction, okay? So try it right now. Come on, you're sitting there. Think about you're going to contract your levator ani, okay? I want you to think about now, especially moving up and forwards, I want you to think about all of the muscles in the pelvic floor, and you are squeezing and lifting, okay? So this is helping, this is your pelvic floor, but in some cases and in some women, they just, there isn't a good awareness of what's going on down there. So with that, before I tell you what can be done, but with that, we need to take into account, these have been studied, is parameters other than just strength, right? But is looking at the rate. How fast can you contract? So come on, try it. And one, and relax, and two, and relax. Now then, just going to count. Three, four, five. Oh, great pelvic floor, guys. Great. So the rate of your force production, okay? Can you do it quickly? And the ability to perform repeated fast contractions. These have all been found to be very important in training pelvic floor function. So things that get used would be E-stim, and there are probes that tend to be used in incontinence training and in physiotherapy clinics that deal with women's health. So there would be probes. I know the clinic I worked at, and we had some women come in, but none of us there were incontinence trained. We had done some where we used E-stim just right up on top of the symphysis pubis, and or up on top above the pubic bone, actually, and then the other electrode we placed as high up in the inner thigh as we can get. Now, I don't know. This is just what I was a new grad, so that is just what my supervisor had told me to try, but in trying to basically do what we could to activate the pelvic floor, really this poor woman, now in hindsight, should have been referred to people that were better trained to deal with that, but small town, we did our best. Okay, number two would be looking at real-time ultrasound and or digital palpation to assess the correctness of a pelvic floor contraction. So this would be done in clinic that's using a real-time ultrasound or the therapist helping to confirm whether they were doing a contraction properly, and then it would go on to actually teaching the client how to, you know, palpate close to there or near there or in there, and doing a proper pelvic floor contraction, and teaching the people how to do fast contractions as well. Okay. If we continue on that section, these women with incontinence may have delayed or absent pelvic floor muscle automatic activity, which suggests that the timing of the pelvic floor muscle contraction is key to preventing leakage. Okay, so it's one of those that it's not just how strong you contract, but can you contract those muscles when you are doing a functional activity, when you are walking up and down stairs, when you are bending over to pick up a dog toy off the floor. So then it would be looking at teaching how to contract those muscles before you start to do something. So maybe it can start off as simple as, you know, contracting the pelvic floor as you brush your teeth. Okay? It would then move on to teaching pelvic floor contractions just before an activity that increases the intra-abdominal pressure. So coughing, sneezing, laughing, blowing your nose. Come on, I want you to try it now. Contract your pelvic floor. Now, okay, so try coughing and holding that pelvic floor contraction. And so it's not just it's a matter of doing it right, shall we say. One of the things that they find with women with incontinence is that they tend to be overactive in their internal and external obliques. So they are trying to use abdominals, but they're not aware of their pelvic floor well enough. So this is exactly what your training is. Use your pelvic floor and then practice your coughing, sneezing, laughing, or blowing your nose. Okay? Then you want to try and incorporate abdominals, and in particular transverse abdominis for using both pelvic floor and transverse abdominis with your coughing, for example. Okay. And then the next subcategory here is postural and movement dysfunctions. Okay, so evidence exists that alignment of the spine and pelvis may affect pelvic floor muscle and trunk muscle co-activation, and that what is desirable is a neutral spine. So lordosis in the neck, a little bit of kyphosis in the thoracic spine, lordosis again in the lumbar spine, and a neutral pelvis. And that this is best for optimized recruitment of the deep trunk stabilizing muscles. So what we look at here, so we could look at needing to mobilize lumbar spine or sacroiliac joints, and, well, yeah, those ones, and looking at strengthening of the pelvic floor, the abdominals. I'm going to throw in glutes, because especially in the dogs, I find that huge, and I find glutes are really important stabilizers of the sacroiliac joint. Okay? And then looking at posture. Okay? So posture in different positions and with functional activities. Okay? So what is your posture when you are bending over? What is your posture when you stand compared to when you sit? And looking at improving posture and having the client be aware of their posture. Okay, there is an association as well with low back and pelvic pain. So, reduced function of the diaphragm, abdominal muscles, and pelvic floor muscles is found amongst individuals with incontinence and respiratory disease, and it may compromise, okay, postural control and could contribute to the development of low back pain. So, what I want to be aware of there is that your low back pain might be because of the incontinence and respiratory disease. So just to throw that out there in a thought processing just is interesting to me. And we also know that increased activity of the superficial trunk muscles, which is seen in patients with back pain, could restrict expansion of the rib cage. So what do we take from this? Is few things. We need to train abdominal muscles, and in particular our transverse abdominis muscles, the pelvic floor muscles, and multifidus, okay, in patients with back pain. And we need to look at teaching diaphragmatic breathing. So do two things. So first off, I want you to put your hand on your belly and breathe in, so that you are pushing your belly outward, so that you are putting the air right into your belly. Okay, you make your belly big as you're breathing in. Now, the other thing you can do is then also, you can put your hands on the low down on the sides of your rib cage, but I find it works even better if you take TheraBand, right? See, there's my TheraBand, at least. I'm telling you it's TheraBand. It could just be that I'm wearing tight underwear, but we'll go with it, TheraBand, that I'm snapping instead of an elastic underwear band. And you wrap that around your lower rib cage, and now breathe in, with the goal being to expand where you've got the TheraBand tied around you. Okay, so that would be teaching some diaphragmatic breathing. Okay, and then lastly in this motor control would be breathing disorders. So, and it ties in a little bit here now too, that respiratory problems are commonly seen in patients with low back pain, pelvic floor dysfunction, and poor posture. So again, we want to look at breathing exercises and retraining. And that poor function of either the diaphragm or pelvic floor muscles can alter their normal mechanism for regulating intra-abdominal pressure, okay? And we know that intra-abdominal pressure, an increase of it, can contribute or be a contributing factor for incontinence. And with that, I'm going to say that looking at how to do a diaphragm release, and I plan on doing that as a whole other video for you guys, but doing a diaphragm release or checking on the diaphragm in patients that are incontinent may be useful, okay? And with all of this, that coughing, you know, and people then that have respiratory problems and are coughing all the time, that could increase the demand on the pelvic floor muscles and be a contributing factor. Okay, now we'll just get into the musculoskeletal factors. So musculoskeletal factors impacting incontinence could be a decreased range of motion. So either articular, muscle, or fascial restrictions in the lumbopelvic hip as well, region, or thorax could contribute to the development of pain, compensatory movement patterns, and maladaptive postures. So We need to look then, from a treatment standpoint, is looking at doing sacroiliac joint, lumbar spine, or hip mobilizations, okay? Maybe even rib mobilizations, too, looking at mobility in the ribs, okay? And as I think about this, because I'm getting so excited about, you know, how some of this can transfer to dogs. I mean, you think about geriatric dogs and a lot of them, how they develop that really stiff, expanded rib cage, okay? Old dog ribs. And maybe this is a contributing factor to incontinence, right? Anyways, throwing it out there. I made myself another note. I'm going to put in more theories to my dog one. And so we could then look at stretching. So looking at stretching or myofascial release. And myofascial release is kind of just your slow hold stretches to the front of the chest, anterior chest, to the hip flexors, okay, to the anterior shoulders, to the neck, okay, and the sides, too, of the lumbar spine and thorax that we want to try and look at myofascially. Is there any tightness in the system that is causing a problem? Okay. Another factor could be soft tissue scarring in the perineal area and abdominal cavity from birthing, and that may contribute to pain and limited mobility, as well as scar tissues or adhesions, okay, that could affect function, position, and motility of the abdominal or pelvic viscera. And therapy-wise for that could be osteopathic techniques that are called visceral manipulation. So, again, that is warranting its own video at some point in time, but I throw this out there right now as a concept for you. Okay, we can also look at decreased muscle strength. And with this, what backs this up is that intensive pelvic floor muscle retraining is believed to cause hypertrophy and increase the stiffness of the pelvic floor muscles, okay, and the connective tissues to improve recruitment efficiency, to elevate the pelvic floor, and to ultimately facilitate an automatic pelvic floor muscle contraction during rises of intra-abdominal pressure. Okay, so this is part of the problem, is that it's no longer an automatic thing. We need to retrain the women to do this beforehand because the automation is no longer there. So treatment-wise, we would look at repetitive strengthening of the pelvic floor and friends, I'll say, so transverse abdominis and such. Okay, and this could be done potentially with the e-stim. So whether it's the e-stim with a probe or a little, well, that's mostly done in the people. And then I'll show you how I think we can do it in dogs next video. Okay, and then lastly would also be a problem with the incontinence could be decreased muscle endurance, and this would be endurance of the pelvic floor muscles. We know that it is significantly reduced in incontinent women as compared to continent women. So we need to train these women to hold their contractions to the point of fatigue. Okay. Then I'm going to throw in one last one here, and this is just my theory, is potentially also stimulating the nervous system. So we had already talked about the which nerves supply the pudendal nerve, okay? And so my theory is we could potentially use acupuncture to stimulate those nerves and whether that might also help with strengthening. So we'll talk a little bit about acupuncture when we get to looking at how to apply it to the dogs. But this is my theory of where acupuncture can fit in, because I do think it might be useful, or at least stimulating the points that could be useful. Okay, and then lastly, is going to be behavioral factors. Okay, so behavioral factors could be incontinence is found in those with chronically elevated intra-abdominal pressure. So people who cough a lot, people who are lifting lots, opera singers, okay, lots of aerobic exercise and high impact activities. So management could be trying to modify or manage activities that create issues in that regard, Okay? And I'm also going to say in here, too, the other time when you would have elevated intra-abdominal pressures is with defecation and really straining in order to poop. So in which case, it could be dietary suggestions, increasing dietary fiber, and regular fluid intake so that these women have normal bowel movements and aren't overly straining during those times, which could cause more pressure and stress and strain and lowering of the pelvic floor muscles. Okay. Incontinence is found in women that are overweight, and that weight loss has been shown to improve urinary incontinence in obese and overweight women, so we can advise and help with weight management. And cigarette smoking is also correlated with incontinence, so help to reduce smoking or stop smoking. Okay, another factor, physical inactivity. So there is more incontinence in sedentary women as compared to those that engage in low-intensity activities for 1 hour or more a week. Okay, so that's kind of easy, is to just say increase your activity and help come up with good exercise advisement. Okay, C is abnormal fluid intake and voiding patterns. So we know that excessive fluid intake can overload the bladder. So what is suggested is one is decreasing liquids by 25% in the hours before bedtime, and or looking at approximately only consuming 1.5 liters per day of liquid, and this may help. There is an association with consumption of caffeinated and carbonated beverages, alcohol, as well as decaffeinated coffee or tea, citrus fruit, vinegar, and artificial sweeteners may all contribute to the problem. Repetitive straining to defecate in those with constipation has been associated with damage of the innervation of the puborectalis muscles, as well as accumulation of stool in the rectum may press on the bladder or alter the position of the pelvic organs. So again, discussion and education about fiber and regular water could be important there. And then lastly, in behavioral issues that we can address, would be poor psychosocial health. So anxiety and social withdrawal due to the incontinence may influence posture, and motor control via the limbic system. And there is a link between social withdrawal, fitness, nutrition, smoking status, and incontinence. So one of the ways that we look at combating that in people would be doing group classes, doing incontinence training in a very supportive and motivating environment, creating attainable goals, you know, starting with small attainable goals that just, you know, that don't adjust the lifestyle too much at the beginning. So small lifestyle adjustments, and that may be more helpful. So those are, that's pretty much what we look at in regards to incontinence and women's health in particular, for incontinence in women. So maybe that helps you, or it helps your mother or your girlfriend or whomever, your wife, okay? And it's good information anyways, and I hope you tune in to the next video where we're going to look at how we can apply all the information we learned to the canine patient and look at how we can do physiotherapy for incontinence in the dog. So come back next time, and until then, cheers!